Actually, these days we are discussing Kaggavisana Sutta, which is available in the Suttanipata, and again a very interesting and wonderful sutta. As you all probably can remember, this sutta starts with explaining certain utterances from Paccheka Buddhas. So there are, if we consider the full enlightened beings, so typically according to the Dhamma, we can say there are fully enlightened Buddha, Samma Sambuddha, and then fully enlightened Paccheka Buddha and fully enlightened Arahant. So Samma Sambuddha is a person who has self-realized and again established the Sangha order and explained the Dhamma in detail, and so that he is able to sort of realize many other people as well, whatever the truth that he has realized and enlightened to. So that sutta, that truth he is explaining in detail so that many others are able to understand, and accordingly they are able to practice. So that is the Samma Sambuddha's role. On the other hand, there are Paccheka Buddhas who are also self-enlightened, but they are not in a position to realize others as to the level of Samma Sambuddha. So Paccheka Buddhas, even though they are self-enlightened, they basically live in seclusion and limited in spreading Dhamma, explaining Dhamma. And on the other hand, the Arahants, so they are the disciples of the Samma Sambuddha. So they follow the teachings of the Samma Sambuddha, and then after some time, they are able to realize Dhamma or gain to become the enlightened beings. Now, according to the commentary, so these suttas, especially this Kaggavisana Sutta, is attributed to Paccheka Buddhas. According to the commentary, so once they become a Paccheka Buddha, so they are explaining how they have lived the previous life, and then how they are living right now, and what was their turning point in their lives. So this is in a way kind of an explanation, and again some kind of encouragement to the other people, because they are explaining that how engaged they were. So before they become Paccheka Buddha, what were their sort of difficulties, what are their, say, latent tendencies, and how they have behaved. And most of them are actually living like normal human beings, and even they are subjected to various defilements. So with those defilements, they are going through a typical normal life, and due to certain reasons that they are able to turn towards the Dhamma, and then they realize Dhamma and they become Paccheka Buddhas. And after they become Paccheka Buddhas, they explain how they have become a Paccheka Buddha and what was the proximate cause. Now here in this verse number 65, similarly another Paccheka Buddha has explained what was the cause for his enlightenment. And here also this is attributed to a king called Brahmadatta, and this king actually was quite fond of taste. Now there are certain people who are quite fond of different sights, so they go from place to place, from country to country to see very beautiful sights. So their main desire is that. On the other hand, certain others are quite fond of music, so they are spending a lot of money and going after various musical shows, etc., because their main entertainment is based on the music. But this particular king is more fond of tasting food. And there are such people as well. So they are, even today, they are going after various dishes, various, say, hotels, various menus, because they are so fond of this, taste. Now, this king is someone like that. So he is also fond of various tastes, and he being the king, he got the privilege to enjoy very tasty food. So one day what happened, this king, he had many companions from the ministers and the minister's sons. So he had a very many companions, fellow friends. And one day while he was participating to an event, so his cooking, royal cooking, has prepared a certain food and he has offered that to the king. So the royal food is extremely tasty, and this time it is extremely tasty, and the cook has done that very nicely, and king has tasted a little and he was amazed because of this taste. Now he forgot all the other participants, that he his fellow friends, that typically he used to share whatever the things with them. But now at this position, he was so obsessed, infatuated with this particular taste, and he couldn't share it with others. So he started to eat. Ultimately, everything he has eaten by himself. So he couldn't share it. So that event over. Now during the evening also, the same thing has happened. Now he is going to some other place. There are other companions, other friends as well with him. And similarly, the cook has offered something more delicious. So king tasted it a little, and again he was so fascinated by the taste. And he was so greedy, he couldn't share it with someone else. So he ate the whole thing. Now again, he couldn't share with his friends. So this can happen even to us. So something is given to us. Probably we are also in a little hungry situation, and we are also fond of delicious food. At that time, we got some food. So now we are started to eat that. Now, even though we have different other companions, but we can't stop. We can't offer it. We can't think of offering it to someone else because we are so infatuated with this food, so fond of this food, and so we eat by ourselves. We eat it alone. The same thing has happened to this king. So he couldn't share it with anyone else, and so he ate the whole thing. Now, after that has happened, while he was resting alone, so this came to his mind. So he used to be a good friend, and he therefore had several other friends. He used to share all the dishes with the others, but unfortunately today he couldn't share anything because he was so greedy. That food was so tasty, so delicious, and he was so greedy. So he was so selfish, and he entertained the whole thing, he didn't share. Now this has made a little bit of frustration in him. His mind start to complain about it. Now this kind of a self-criticism is something really bothering, because there is something that we learn when we are discussing about Dhamma. When someone have developed sila, very good sila, so this kind of self-criticism is absent. So in certain suttas, Venerable Ananda asks, for what purpose is this sila? So Buddha explained, sila is for this sort of sila is for avoiding this sort of self-criticism, to avoid any kind of self-complaint. Because suppose you do something wrong, it may, because of that, there are several others are also suffering, and you also suffering, and that bothers you after that. So it is again and again coming to the mind. Therefore, it is bothering you. It is disturbing you. So once you go to sitting, maybe to the sitting meditation or to the walking session, again and again, your mind is criticizing yourself, complaining yourself. So this is something that we need to realize. So if we have to avoid such situations, so we got to maintain a very good behavior through the body and the words. So that is why sila is quite important. So Buddha mentioned, when someone is maintaining good sila, such kind of self-criticism is absent. So instead, you are getting some sort of a self-praise where you feel that you are a worthy person. Previously, I was not careful about these kind of things, but now I am a very careful, considerate person. So I am thinking about others' welfare and my own welfare. So this basically, so instead of self-criticism, now you are getting some sort of a worthy feeling, that you feel worthy. You feel that you are capable of doing it, and you are worthy of going forward. Some spiritual qualities are sort of deserving by yourself. So that kind of a positive atmosphere available in the mind is quite important for our meditation. Now here, so when this king went through this situation, so his mind started to complain and he couldn't bear it. Now he was thinking, I should restrain my greed. So this is the determination that he got. So he understood how greedy he was, and he now want to restrain himself. He want to correct himself. So that's a good thing. Now he took it so seriously and he left the palace and he became a monk and started to practice. Now when he is continuing his practice, because of his previous perfections, and he was a fortunate person, lucky person, and he was able to become a Paccheka Buddha. So after he becoming a Paccheka Buddha, now he is explaining this verse. Now here, give me a second. So this Paccheka Buddha explains that now this Paccheka Buddha is explaining that what has happened to him previously and now how he is behaving in a way. Now the verse going like this: Rasesu gedhang akarang alolo ananya posi sapadana chari kule kule appati baddha chitto eko chare kagga visana kappu. So basically he is mentioning rasesu gedhang akarang alolo. So rasesu gedhang, so rasa means here different tastes. Now gedha means the greediness. Now not arousing greed for tastes. Now there are different tastes were there, but now he is restraining himself, he is correcting himself. Now he is restraining himself so that he is no more becoming greedy for those kind of tastes. So you can see some kind of a self-actualization process is going on. He is correcting himself, he is taming himself. Pasesu gedang akarang alolo, and not going after them. When we are so greedy, so we go after them. We are going from one hotel to the other hotel because we are so greedy. We are so fond of the tastes of different food. But now he is restraining himself. Now he is explaining how he has restrained himself, how he has corrected himself, how he was able to overcome that greed. So that is kind of an honest confession that he is doing. So he was behaving like this, but now with some effort he was able to correct himself, not arousing greed for taste and not hankering for them. Ananya posi sapadana chari. So ananya posi, so that means basically he is not liable to sort of give food to any others. Now previously he had a kind of regret that he didn't sort of share the food with others, but now he is alone and therefore there is no such responsibility, and therefore he is feeling comfortable. And he got only a little food, maybe through the village pindapata, village alms round, and that is enough for himself. And at the moment there is no one because he is alone. He is continuing a secluded practice. So he is free from that bondage as well. Ananya posi. Sapadana chari. So this sapadana chari is a term specially used for alms round for the monks. You know, Typically, the monks are used to go on alms round from house to house. They are going to the village and they are going alms round from house to house. Now, typically, suppose there is a very poor house. So if we skip that poor house and trying to get a delicious fruit only from the rich house, so then that is not called sapadanachari. So sapadanachari is where you are not skipping any house. You are going one after the other in order, not skipping any house. So you are going to the rich house, you are going to the very poor house, you are going to the middle class houses. So all the houses are covered and you are going in order. So that is called sapadanachari. Now he is going in order, sapadanachari. Now you can see he is in a way restraining himself and in a way attacking that greed. Now if he is so driven by the greed, he has become a slave to the greed, then he can skip the poor houses and he can go to the more rich houses and try to get the delicious food. But he is not doing it, rather he is going one after the other. So poor people also might offer very rough food, but he is happy about it and he can bear it, and he is not going after tasty food. Rather, whatever offered, now he can accommodate, or whatever offered he can eat without considering the taste. Now he is restraining himself. Sapadanachari. Kule kule appatibaddha chitto. So not nourishing others, walking for alms without skipping houses. And kule kule appatibaddha chitto. With a mind unbound to this or that family. Now typically when someone is going on alms round, and again when he is dealing with various houses, lay people, so there are certain bondages slowly building up. So he now become responsible for doing something to them. Maybe helping them, maybe chanting paritta, maybe going to this and that occasion, because he has so many engagements with the lay life, with lay people. So that is called patibaddha chitta. So there are many devotees, there are lay people who are helping him. So, but he has now kind of a bondage to them. So as a result of that, he is somewhat like bound to do something. But now here, he is not having such situation. He is with an appatibaddha chitta. He is not having any kind of a close relationship with anyone. So there may be several devotees, but he is associating them with distance, not going too close. And there's a very beautiful simile given for this. So that is referring to the Venerable Maha Kassapa, and it is called Chandopama Patipada. Venerable Maha Kassapa is continuing his village Pindapata, alms round, and he is not maintaining close relationship with anyone. So he is actually helping the others by going on alms round because he is an arahant. But he is making a distance, maintaining a distance, not having any kind of a intimacy with anyone. So Chandopama means that it is like a moon. Every day moon is sort of changing itself. Say it is not the same moon which we saw yesterday that we see today. It has changed. And on tomorrow it is first changed. So likewise, so throughout 28 days, so moon is changing. Every day it is changing. So such behavior, Chandopama, like a moon, every day changing and become a new person. So probably you are going on arms round on one direction today and completely different direction that you are going on arms round the other day. So that other people are, and you are not responsible, you are not having any kind of a responsibility that you should go to this house. There is no such thing. And you are a new person. So likewise, so Venerable Maha Kassapa is maintaining such kind of a very beautiful austere practice, and Buddha was praising him how he is maintaining this kind of a relationship, not getting too close, and again not having any grudge or any kind of a distance as well. So just maintain the proper relationship. So that is the approved relationship that Buddha is explaining with respect to Venerable Mahakassapa. And he is asking other monks to make such a person, such a relationship. So taking Venerable Mahakassapa as the example of that maintaining such relationship. So that is the approved, or that is the praised relationship that Buddha is explaining. Now here, this Pacheka Buddha is also telling the same thing. We are kule kule appati baddha chitto. So he doesn't have any sort of too much close relationship with any kind of a family. So he is common to everyone. He's a Kalyana Mitta to everyone. So anyone can approach him. And he is just maintaining a distant relationship. Eko chare kagga visana kappu. So with that kind of a situation, with that kind of an attitude, with that kind of a behavior, he is maintaining a secluded life like a rhinoceros horn. So you can see how beautifully it has come to the last words or last phrase, where different aspects of seclusion, different aspects of monk's life, and how he is behaving in the village, and how he is maintaining his relationship with others, and considering everybody equally, going to the rich houses, going to the poor houses, going to the middle class houses, considering everyone equally. So likewise, this seclusion has many aspects. So that different perspectives are well explained. And ultimately, the whole thing is summarized using the last phrase, Eko chare kagga visana kappu. This person, this Pacheka Buddha, is living like a rhinoceros horn. So therefore, this kind of a mature type of verse explaining the monk's life, very exemplary monk's life is explained here. And again, how he was strategic to remove his greed, to handle his greed, where he even couldn't control it during his kingship. Now he's explaining how he has controlled it. And ultimately, he was quite successful. He became a Pacheka Buddha. So this is the story behind today's verse and the explanation about today's verse. With that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
I'm sorry, Bhante. Currently, there are 4 questions. Question number 1. This is actually quite a long one. It's in mindfulness in day-to-day activities. Dear Bhante, so far, I am quite pleased with the progress of my breathing and walking practice. I have written multiple reports and got valuable guidance from Bhante. Much merits for your service. While the sitting and walking practice are progressing well, I had doubts about how to extend the learning to day-to-day practice. As Bhante advised, I start with the activities which I do alone, brushing teeth, taking a shower, eating, etc. During an activity, I could focus and pay attention to the touch sensations and sometimes the smell and sound. For example, how the water flows on the hands and its fluidity, how the brush touches the teeth and puts various intensity of pressure around the teeth, how the smoothness of the toothpaste foam feels around the gum, etc. Various sensations during the activity similar to the breathing and walking practice. The most striking revelation is that how fleeting the mind is during these activities compared to standard practice. When I focus intentionally, yes, I feel the sensations and I'm mindful. And then the next moment, I get lost in some thought until the next mindfulness moment comes. When I go prepared for these blank spots, I see thoughts coming and going for a few moments and I get lost again. While brushing teeth during the 8 to 10 minutes period, I find that at least 20 to 30 times I get lost like this. It's like a continuous lost world. I come to sudden sensations and being mindful here and there like lightning strikes. Anyway, these moments of mindfulness are quite relaxing, joyful, and fulfilling as always. I tried to keep the mindfulness moments continuing from one sensation to the other intact, and seems I could do it if I take special care and effort. I never realized that how fleeting the mind can be when we want to be mindful across different sensations. I can easily do 1 hour sitting until the breath fades away and transforms to spacious space, and keep on observing elemental characteristics and the bleached mixture of all in one. I could easily do 1 hour walking, which transforms into automatic walking mode, while the mind rests on the relaxed spacious space. But I cannot continuously keep my attention for 10 minutes while brushing teeth from one sensation to the other without any interruption. Is this normal when we try to expand mindful practice day-to-day activities, Bhante? I would like to challenge the friends in this forum to check it out as well. Even if you develop regular sitting and walking practice, I will be quite a challenge to diversify it. Appreciate Bhante's comments and further advice with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, you are doing well. Basically, this diversified mindfulness is something that makes the practice quite beautiful. Because if we simply have walking and sitting, then our mindfulness is very limited to two postures and only to a very specific item. But when you are trying to apply mindfulness in day-to-day activities, daily activities, this is where you are broadening it. And you are come to the meta-awareness rather than simply kind of a micro-type of mindfulness. Now you are expanding your mindfulness. Because, say, you are doing something, you have to pay attention to that. At the same time, you are paying attention to the various sensations, various feelings, and maybe even thoughts. But you are able to maintain that mindful space. So that is the beauty. So immediately you might not be able to have that skill, but as we are continuing it, slowly we get this skill, and then we are able to develop mindfulness to many activities as well. Suppose that, as you said, we are starting with brushing the teeth mindfully, and later probably we can expand it to some other activity. Okay, washing face also you are doing mindfully. Or say you are wearing clothes mindfully. You are eating mindfully, and you are listening mindfully. So likewise, so it is our responsibility, or it is our skill to, or our say kind of dedication, that we need to expand mindfulness like this. It is not that we don't have time to practice. Rather, how different activities that we are already engaged with, that we do mindfully. So it's a matter of continuing our various activities, but adding mindfulness on top of it. We are eating every day, and how we eat mindfully. We are brushing teeth every day, and how we do mindfully. So likewise, we are introducing mindfulness to various day-to-day activities, and that is how slowly we are getting used to mindfulness. Previously, we are purposely, deliberately trying to be mindful, because mind is so distracted and going here and there, so there is no any kind of mindfulness. But now we are purposely trying to make the mind mindful. So as a result of that, slowly mind recognizes this quality. Mind used to stay in the present moment. So whatever the activity is going on in the present moment becomes the field of awareness. So the mind is engaged with that activity. So that helps for the beginners to avoid any kind of wandering. And later, actually, this also evolve, and you don't need to purposely be mindful, because mindfulness has become some sort of a habit then. So mindfulness is now taking hand, and you don't need to sort of struggle with it. It has become an inherent quality. Then actually you can go further, recognizing very subtle characteristics of the object that we are, where you are being mindful. So you are now being mindful on breath. And now you are trying to understand subtle aspects of breath too closely. Whether it is long, whether it is short, is it the beginning, is it the middle, is it the end, or is it warm, is it cool, where is it touching. So likewise, those subtle aspects you are now trying to recognize, to clearly know. So that is the next step, that is clear comprehension, sampajanya. So as you are continuing, more and more events going to happen. So you may get more and more details, but later at a given time, you start to take a transition, kind of a turn back. So that this kind of very, say, evolutionary process is there in the meditation. So it's a matter of continuing our practice slowly. we will understand these different turning points or milestones in our practice. Yeah, back to you, Chatu.
Question number 2 of 5. This is a general question. Dear Swami Nwansa, is there any online retreat being organized during the December Christmas break to practice mindfulness? Much merits for your valuable service. That's the end of the question.
At the moment, I am not aware of that. Give me a second. Actually, Ms. Priyanka, our chief coordinator, actually given kind of what you call this retreat schedule. I need to check that. I think Dineth has updated that. Let me check. Because it's already certain meditation sessions are fairly occupied in the retreat center. And even today, we are going through a Pirivena retreat. Several monks are participating. Yes, there is a bhikkhu retreat from December 26th. December 26th to 31st, that's a 5 days retreat that is actually broadcast via Zoom. And again, from December 19th to 24th, another bhikkhu retreat is going on. So therefore, basically, except 25th, we have two retreats covering the end of December. Yeah. I can show you. I can show you the information just for a moment. This is updated and available in our Nisarnavani website. You can go to this, and this is where all the retreats, residential retreats, published. And whoever going to participate has to look at this retreat and talk to the respective organizer and apply. I mean, you can even apply online. Okay.
Question
okay, number, we can move. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Question number 3 of 5, mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, during the initial stages of the gross breath calming down in the sitting practice, we can logically reflect how the basic principle of Dhamma, the cause and effect, links with the observations. However, once the breath fades away and reaches to a state where we can observe anything which comes in front of us, for example, the spacious nature without an object, reappearance of the subtle breath, element characteristics, etc., it is difficult to link any cause and effect with these phenomena. Maybe it's not the right place to align these basic principles when we reflect on our experience at a later stage. Thought of checking with Bhante for your valuable guidance. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah. So basically, so as you mentioned, I mean, this is not the exact place or suitable place that we have to reflect on cause and effect relationship. Rather, we get more easy places or more evident places as we progress. Say, for example, as you continue a practice, so you are able to understand various feelings. Probably you may understand these feelings are causing because of certain contact. And in say more rough terms, I can say while walking, so when your foot is sort of in the air, so you can't feel much. But the very moment it is touching the ground, you get a very rough feeling. So that means, so that type of contact is causing that rough feeling. So likewise, Buddha mentioned, so different feelings are happening because of the respective type of different contact. So that is the important thing, and that is an easy entry point to the Paticchasamuppada, where you are understanding the link. Passapaccaya Vedana. Contact causes feeling. So different contacts are there. So depending on the depending on the type of contact, if it is a kind of a contact which is generating pleasurable feelings, then when such contact happens, pleasurable feelings arise. If it is a feeling which is contributing painful feelings, if such kind of a contact happens, then the painful feelings are going to arise. And if it is a kind of a contact which is causing, say, neutral feelings, then whenever such kind of a contact happens, the result is neutral feelings. So likewise, Neutral feelings or pleasurable feelings or painful feelings are the result of respective contact. So you can do this observation while walking and while sitting. So once you are sort of coming to a certain level, immediately you can't do it because your mind is distracting. So you first of all have to develop mindfulness and fair amount of concentration. And after that, you can observe this whole process with the angle of cause and effect. So you are now trying to understand how this feeling is produced. So what are the exact causes? So you are now going a little bit of deeper, or you are trying to penetrate the experience so that you are able to understand the real causes. You are applying yoniso manasikara, you are applying wise attention to understand these exact causes. So that is how we are slowly penetrating into the patisamuppada or dependent origination. Yeah.
Question number 4 of 5. This has got 3 parts to it, but they're very short. I'll just read all of them out. Part 1 is walking. Dear Venerable Bhante, as I started, I could feel the weight and pressure on my knees. I could also feel that I was forcing a lot of pressure into my heels, then my toes. After a while, I could feel the pressure being lifted slowly and my feet began to brush the surface of the floor. But when walking also, I felt that it was almost impossible to keep my body steady as my shoulders kept swaying backwards and forwards. Part 2, this is sitting. I could feel my chest rising and falling with the in and out takes of breath. I could also feel an uncomfortable sensation that carried on in my brain for the rest of the meditation session. However, I could feel a gush of cool wind on my body at some point. And part 3 is just like a general question. When we meditate, must our main objective be blocking the other unrelated thoughts and trying to control the mind? Or is it to just notice the sounds that come by and to raise awareness of our body? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, to answer the last question, so basically at the beginning, we are a little selective. So we are trying to pay attention to a selected object. Say while walking, we are selecting the foot, the soles of the foot. So we are trying to pay attention to that. What are the sensations available on the soles? So that there are certain advantages in doing that, because we don't know how to concentrate the mind, because our mind is scattered, distracted. So such mind is not so beneficial. Now we got to first of all properly concentrate the mind. So when we are limiting your attention to the, say, soles, so soles is a very limited, say, area, and you are now trying to focus your attention there slowly as you are continuing your practice. So this ability to concentrate, ability to collect your attention is developing. So that is one advantage. On the other hand, you are able to properly aim your attention. Say, because when left foot is touching, you have to correctly aim your attention there. When right foot is touching, you have to properly aim your attention there. So likewise, kind of a mechanism is there that through which we are learning, we are developing certain mental skills. So can you repeat the last question, Chatu? To be exact.
Do you want me to repeat the general question or just like the walking and sitting experience?
No, not the first 2 parts, but the last part.
Last one, yeah, okay. When we meditate, must our main objective be blocking other unrelated thoughts and trying to control the mind, or is it to just notice the sounds that come by and to raise awareness of our body? That's it.
Okay, good. So now when we are continuing like this, now we are in a way not paying attention to the thoughts. There are thoughts arising, but we are discarding them and trying to pay attention to the sensations. So that is the sensations available in the foot. So likewise, we can say, yes, it is true that we are not paying attention to thoughts at the beginning, because still we are not ready for that. But later, there is a time that we directly confront thoughts. Directly try to deal with thoughts. So therefore, we can't generalize and say meditation is this or that. At the beginning, we do one type of exercise in order to build certain skills So once those skills are being built, then we are ready. Then we can directly deal with the mind. So therefore, likewise, we need to understand. So they are giving a kind of a concrete definition is not possible. So it's a kind of an evolving process. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 6, general question. Dear Bhante, I want to maintain an apatti baddha chitta and have a not tangled mind in daily life with things coming going as a lay person. Bhante, I find some ghostly signs are retained and it's coming in the way for progression. What should be the guidelines, Bhante, to achieve this? Much appreciated and merits with metta. That's the end of the question.
Ghostly signs.
Yeah. I find some ghostly signs are retained. And I think it's like blocking progression.
Yeah, so one thing is that while our eyes are closed, if there are a typical kind of signs are appearing, suppose you are seeing a Buddha image, you are seeing a pagoda, you are seeing Sri Mahabodhi, you are seeing someone who has passed away. So likewise, if these kind of typical signs are happening in the mind, we simply need to understand these are merely signs. Because our eyes are closed, so what we see is nothing but a mental image. So we have so many experiences, we have so many previous perceptions about these places, about these whatever the signs, and now they are popping up to the mind. Because as you know, as we continue our practice, so the consciousness, vijnana, loses its establishment. So typically, previously, it has a very gross pedestal to stay. It has a very gross object to establish. But now that object is becoming more and more refined. Previously, there are various bodily processes going on and vijnana could stay there. But now all those processes are diminishing, fading away, disappearing, and they all disappeared now. Nothing is there. So where are the consciousness going to establish? So that is how the perceptions are now going to come to the picture. Now there are stored perceptions, stored various signs available in our mind, and they come to the surface and trying to occupy the mind. So if we give any importance to them, then we get trapped. And therefore Buddha advised us, telling that these perceptions are merely like a mirage. Marichi kupama sanya. So therefore we have to have some amount of wisdom to recognize them as merely signs. And after that, actually, when we are properly handling them, we are not giving any value to them, we are not personifying them, they start to fade away. So this is how we need to understand the situation. So whatever you see, it may be a ghostly sign, it may be a kind of a very beautiful sign, or it may be a kind of a terrifying sign, whatever it is, but it is a sign, it is a nimitta, it is a sanya, it is a perception, it is a mirage, it is not something true, it is not something substantial. So therefore you got to you should not give any value to them. Rather, you better take your attention back to the breath or back to your body or whatever it is more tangible. Yeah.
Question number 6. This is actually a follow-up on that first question. It's about the mindfulness in day-to-day activities. Dear Bhante, regarding the earlier question on day-to-day practice, is it okay to focus on multiple sensations other than just the touch sensation? For example, while brushing the teeth, the smell sensations and the sound sensations in the process. Will it be helpful to avoid distracting if we focus on multiple sensations, or is it just one simple sensation we should start with? That's the end of the question.
Actually, both are all right. Whatever is convenient to you, you can even switch the attention. Say at one time you are trying to be mindful on various sensations, so you are getting a kind of a holistic perspective. But later, and once your mind is more clear, confident, then you can select a more significant or more prominent one as well. So both are there in the practice, so we are using both. Sometimes we are going to the very prominent single kind of a sensation, but certain other times we are having a kind of a holistic view of everything. Many sensations are there, so we step back and watch them as a kind of an overview. That is also possible. So time to time you can do this. So both are correct. Yeah.
Question number 7. This is just a follow-up from that. The question about where they mentioned the ghost. Bante, I mean like watercolors, not like a scary ghost. Bante, why does my mind give value? How can I reduce this? With metta, that's the end of the question.
So different colors can happen. So if it is not representing any kind of typical sign, if it is just a kind of a color, it is just a kind of a light, so then that is indicating a different story. This actually indicates fair amount of development of concentration. So you should not avoid it. You can't actually avoid it. Let it happen. So assume that if you are, especially if you are developing Anapanasati, there's a higher possibility that concentration to develop. So as the concentration develops, so these kind of colorful signs can happen. They are not representing any kind of mundane type of signs. Rather, it is merely a color, merely a light. But later, as you are continuing these, different colors become more and more white or bright and more kind of even kind of a transparent. So different colors indicate that still it is growing, not yet come to the more mature type of concentration. But as you continue, so different colors will fade away, rather more whiter kind of a color, more brighter color may going to appear. So therefore, just continue. And these are type of different sort of indications that the concentration is developing.
So that was the last question, Bante. Should we finish up early today then?
Sure. Sorry.
Okay, good. Yeah, we've finished the question, so we'd like to end the session. Firstly, I'd like to thank Bante and pass on merits for this dedicated program to help us. Also to the people working seen and unseen behind the scenes to help out with this program. And lastly, to the participants, because without you, we could not continue. With that, I'd like to end Theravan Saranai.
Yeah, Theravan Saranai.